Many on the left today want to destroy the Electoral College. What is it? And why do they want to destroy it? Well, recently one report noted, quote, Virginia just became the 18th state to join a growing effort that could effectively sideline the Electoral College. Through an agreement called the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. States pledge their electoral votes to the National Popular Vote winner, a little-known strategy that's already over 80% of the way to taking effect, all without changing the Constitution. End quote. Well, what is the Electoral College, and why did the founders create it in the first place? Author Tara Ross is a retired lawyer. She's really the go-to person on the whole subject of the Electoral College. That's what Dennis Prager thinks. In fact, Prager U had a video with her explaining the Electoral College, and that video was seen by more people than any of the other popular Prager U videos, any of them. That's really fantastic. By the way, Tara Ross has also written some children's books, such as We Created a Country, The Story of Our Constitution. And one aspect of that Constitution is what we call the Electoral College. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Tara, it is always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Oh, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Sure. Okay. First of all, for those not aware of it, what is the Electoral College? And just go ahead and take your time to explain it, because it's kind of complicated. And that may be part of the reason that the opponents of it are able to get away with trying to destroy it and, you know, keep it from continuing.
I guess it is a little complicated and hard to explain in a soundbite, which is why it comes under attack so much. But basically, our system of electing presidents, we do it state by state. There are two phases to our election. The first phase of the election is the one that you are used to thinking about as election day. So that's where we all go to, you know, our ballots and or cast our ballots at whatever we do in our in individual states. I cast my ballot in Texas. Everybody, you know, this process repeats itself 51 times, really, because you count D.C., across the nation. These are internal state elections, and the purpose of these elections is to identify which slate of electors is going to represent that state in the presidential election during phase two of the election. And phase two of the election is in December. Nobody pays any attention to it half the time, but it's the election among the state electors themselves. And that is the election that actually determines who is going to be president of the United States. It takes 270 electors to win. And, you know, if nobody wins, there's a backup process if nobody can get to that majority, but we haven't used that process in literally a couple hundred years. So most of the time, we're able to get there with just this two-part process where, you know, we have our purely Democratic elections in the state, winner take all, you know, who wins the state gets the electors, and then the second part of the election where you have these ballots cast among the electors. And some people might say, well, why do we have this complicated system? What is the purpose of this? Well, I think it's really important to remember where the founders were when they were establishing our Constitution and our how we were going to choose our presidents. They were going back and forth, you know, the big states and the small states. The small states were really very worried that they were going to get outvoted by the big states time and time again. And, you know, probably with good cause, because they had, you know, had been functioning under an Articles of Confederation where the small states were able to protect themselves, and they were worried that in a new constitution they would not be able to do that. And I think the other thing to remember about our founders is that they were students of history. They could look back at all of the history of failed democracies in the past and see what had gone wrong. They knew that power corrupts. They knew that humans are fallible. They knew that you need to have checks and balances to protect against these impulses of human nature, or you're going to constantly end up in a situation where you're going to have a bare or emotional majority just tyrannizing everybody else, which you, by the way, you could see that in Virginia as recently as, was that last week that vote happened, where literally 51% of the people is telling the other 49% of the people, yeah, sorry, you don't get to be represented in this vote. We're just going to outvote you, right? So the founders knew that this is how human nature works, and they set up checks and balances to protect us against that. And one of these checks and balances is the Electoral College.
Well, that's really well put. And you have mentioned this before, but I think it's such a great analogy that if you have pure democracy, it's like two wolves and a sheep. and the two wolves and the sheep, you know, decide what are we going to have for dinner, and the two wolves vote, we're going to have sheep for dinner, and the sheep has no say. And in effect, what the Electoral College does, it says, yes, Wyoming, you do have a say in who becomes the president.
Exactly. I mean, so the way that we structure our electors, which I guess I left this out in the first explanation, but you have the same number of electors as you do members of Congress. So, and I used to be able to just roll these numbers off my tongue, and I'm getting too old. I guess I can't anymore. I think in California, I can remember California has 54. That's because they have 52 congressmen and two senators. Wyoming has 3. That's because they have 1 congressman and 2 senators. So every small state gets just a little bit of a leg up, right? They still don't have as many votes as California, but it's not as big a discrepancy as it would be. And certainly when you add up all the small states together, they could band together against anything that, you know, the big states were trying to do to them. So it's a compromise that kind of spend off the same compromise that the founders put together for Congress. They're trying to make sure that, yeah, we have a self-governing society. Majorities still rule, but we're going to put in safeguards to make sure that the majorities have to be reasonable. And there is some, you know, incentive to work together across state lines.
You know, it's funny, when you were talking about the state-by-state principle, I was thinking, you know, it was the states that created the United States of America. And people seem to forget that. They made this agreement together. And if, like you were saying earlier, the small states could easily be worried if too much power went over to the large states. They could just, you know, steamroll them every time. California, 54 electoral votes, at least based on that, you know, previous estimate you said.
Yeah, they used to have 55. They lost an elector for the first time, like ever, in the last census.
And that, why is that? That's because their policies are so bad. So many people are leaving in U-Haul when U-Haul
comes. Yeah,
they're moving out.
Definitely. And Texas has gone up. I'm the new Texas number is just gone from my head right now. But Texas is increasing. Florida is increasing. California has gone down by 1 elector and is anticipated to go down even more the next time. So, you know, and I think another thing to think about here is the founders, you know, when they looked at the situation, I said they wanted to be self-governing. They wanted to be self-governing. They just fought a war for this. But they also remembered that even if they had been given a seat at the table at Parliament, they would have been outvoted time and time again. And so the small states would have felt that even more keenly than the big states, right? They knew that you have to have additional safeguards or there will be a, you know, 50.01% or maybe even if you're really unlucky, just a plurality, like not even a majority, will just outvote you.
So if, let's suppose, just kind of like a back to the future type, you know, scenario where you have, you know, this is what it was like if such and such, you know, was the case. Suppose there were no Electoral College. Let's suppose this covenant against the Electoral College were to succeed and they somehow managed to abolish it, although it does seem to me that's pretty unconstitutional. What would America look like as far as elections and our representation and our freedom?
Well, I think there's actually two different scenarios here. One is that if we get rid of the Electoral College with this compact, it has its own set of dangers that people are not thinking about right now. And that's because you're not actually getting rid of the state-by-state election process that I described in the beginning. If the National Popular Vote Compact is in effect, Texas will still have its own election rules that will still be different than, you know, New Hampshire and Rhode Island and Michigan. Like, everybody will still have all of their different election rules. So there will be a race to the bottom. Now, Texas has not joined the National Popular Vote Compact. We're not going to. And so if this compact goes into effect, Texas is going to try to mess with it to try to make it unworkable, right? Because we don't want that. Texas could say, we're going to give everybody extra time to early vote. Or Texas could say, we're going to give everybody 3 votes. You get 3 votes for president because we're going to try to inflate all of the totals coming out of Texas and force California to give their electors to the person that we chose, you know, and it will be madness. It will be total madness. There will be lawsuits. There will be equal protection lawsuits. You know, is it fair if Texas gets more time to vote than California? I mean, today, right now, it does not matter that Texas has its own rules and California has a different set of rules because there's no vote cast in Texas that could change the identity of a California elector. But if the National Popular Vote Compact is in effect, then every vote cast in Texas helps to determine what's going to happen in California, right? So now all of a sudden it does matter, and there's going to be, I cannot even begin to describe the chaos that is going to ensue. And in fact, the National Popular Vote Compact people are counting on it, and they don't say it as much as they, but they've been caught on record saying that what they really hope is that it will push us into doing the constitutional amendment that they want to get rid of the Electoral College the official way, because they are hoping for the chaos.
Okay, so suppose they got their wish. You've never been born. No, you know, that kind of thing. They got their wish. The Electoral College is abolished. What is America like after that?
Well, then I think Democrats think that they're going to benefit from this because of their strength in big cities. And they think that what's going to happen is it's going to become easier to win the presidency with a national popular vote. The reality is that our system, our two-party system, is going to splinter because there's not going to be anything holding it together anymore, right? There's no more need for coalition building. It doesn't matter where you get your votes. Today, right now, it's not enough just to rack up votes in one state. If you're a Republican, you can't come to Texas and give the oil interest everything they want, try to get 100% of Texas votes and call it a day. You have to spread out your victories over the country. You have to work across state lines. You can't offer Texans such outrageous things that nobody else will vote for them. Likewise with Democrats, they can't go to California and offer the environmentalist anything and everything they want because they also have to appeal to other parts of the country. But when you get rid of the Electoral College, you take away all of those incentives to work together across state lines, and instead you reward the opposite. You know, if Kamala Harris wants to go to L.A. and San Francisco and just promise anything and everything, maybe she really could get close to 100% of, you know, California voters, and that would be really beneficial to her. She wants that. Likewise, you know, whoever comes after Trump could go to Texas and do the same thing. But then it'll get even worse than that because all of these parts of the country will start to feel ignored, and so more and more third-party candidates will start to pop up to try to, you know, satisfy the needs that are not being represented by this rush to the big cities. And, you know, this does happen overseas. It happens in places like France where you literally have 8 to 10 candidates in an election and they might get a plurality of like 20%. And then you have a runoff between two people who got maybe 20% of the vote. So you have a runoff between two people, both of whom were rejected by 80% of the population. And in fact, in France, they're so unhappy with this system that they're able to do the thing to like cast a blank ballot. It's like a protest vote. There was a recent election where they were so unhappy with their two choices, there were record numbers of these blank ballots passed because they didn't want either of these people, you know? So at least now, you know, I'm not saying the two-party system is perfect. I'm saying there's nothing that is going to be perfect, however, and at least we have a system where even if nobody is really getting their first choice candidate all the time, we have a system to identify a good compromise candidate that might be your second place person that you can live with and that is acceptable to a broad majority of, or a broad group of Americans.
So these people trying to abolish the Electoral College don't know what they're really asking for and what the effects could be. You know, by the way, isn't it true that, as an example, Italy, ever since the World War II, so ever since the collapse of Mussolini and so forth and the end of World War II, they've had a new government just about every year, every year. I mean, while we've continued, you know, it's utter chaos. And what we enjoy in America, and so much of it gets back to the biblical understanding of the depravity of man. You can read this in the Federalist Papers, like number 51. Men are not angels. That's why we have to protect ourselves not only from each other, and therefore have government, but we have to protect ourselves from the government since the government is run by men, and men are not angels. Anyway, TaraRoss.com for more information on these wonderful books about the indispensable Electoral College and also We Created a Country, the Story of Our Constitution. Thank you, Tara. All the best.
Thank you so much.